the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. The best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. And on the line with me is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site. And then, of course, one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. We're at episode 394. This is our normal Tuesday show. As you guys, if you've been listening, you've noticed, we have over the last couple of weeks, we're changing formats slightly. Going to be adding more shows over the course of this offseason. Maybe each edition of the show might be a little shorter. So maybe it won't be the best hour record Cardinals talk on the web, but it might be the over the course of the year, the best hours of Cardinals talk on the web. But we're in episode 394. We recorded last on a Sunday night after the NFC Championship game and the AFC Championship game. And we talked about those games and kind of a Cardinals lens, what we could take away from those two wins, the Eagles going on to the Super Bowl to play the Kansas City Chiefs. But we have more head coaching news. Seth, if you want to plug your podcast, the original Draft Breakdown podcast, especially since we are full on in draft season. We just had the NFL PA Collegiate Bowl over the weekend. The Senior Bowl and the Shrine Game are coming up this week. So there is lots of content, and I'm sure you guys are breaking it all down on your show.
Yeah, and we'll be back tomorrow with another episode where we look at, you know, the Shrine and Senior Bowl weigh-ins and kind of the numbers that came from that. You know, we looked at the NFLPA game, and that was really interesting because, you know, those are guys that don't get the big love, but you know.
Those are maybe some day three guys and some priority free agents.
Day three guys, you know, fill out the roster guys that end up being, you know, key contributors on special teams and stuff like that. And every once in a while you get a hidden gem in there. And so, you know, that was the big thing. So it's, you know, it's the best time of year with the All-Star games and now, you know, the Super Bowl right around the corner and then, or the big game, whatever we have to call it. I don't know what the rules are.
We can call it the Super Bowl because we're not advertising.
and then we head to, you know, free agency or the NFL Combine, free agency in the draft. So it's, you know, like you said, it's the best time of year and the best time to subscribe if you want more information.
Absolutely. But in this edition of the show, we will focus on the Cardinals head coaching search as there's more news. It's just two nights after we last recorded a show, but there's still more stuff to talk about. And we'll talk about Kyler Murray and his injury. We pushed that to this show because there was more to talk about there. But we will lead with the news of, well, there are two candidates now off the board still for the Cardinals. They lost out on Frank Reich. He was hired by the Carolina Panthers. He was kind of the guy, like, for me, I felt he was a nice fit. I felt he was a nice fit in 2018. Next off the list is D'Amico Ryans. He officially and now has been named the head coach of the Houston Texans. That we should have seen that coming, especially since he did cancel his interview with the Cardinals two Saturdays ago before the divisional round game. But at that point, we weren't sure if it was a cancellation or a postponement. But it was essentially, he had heard what he needed to hear from the Texans, the team that drafted him, where he made a name for himself in the NFL. And that was all she wrote. Once the 49ers were eliminated, he was free to then sign a contract. And that is now official. D'Amico Ryans is head coach of the Houston Texans. And then the other big fish, the big fish of the coaching carousel this offseason is Sean Payton. And apparently he is now off the board for the Cardinals as the Denver Broncos appear to be set to sign him to be their next head coach. The big domino that was needed was an agreement with the Saints for compensation to allow Sean Payton to be hired by another team. Payton, who was head coach of the New Orleans Saints for 15 years, he retired after the 2021 season and is still technically under contract through 2024. So for the next 2 years, had any, like this season and next off season, had he wished to coach again, like this off season, then the Saints were entitled to compensation. They could block Sean Payton from signing anywhere because, you know, contractually he is still bound to New Orleans. You can't just retire and go somewhere else until the terms of your contract have been met. And the it's wasn't cheap. The Broncos reportedly are giving are willing to give up this year's first round pick, the 29th pick in the draft, and that's the pick that they received from the Miami Dolphins in the Bradley Chubb trade, which was originally the San Francisco 49ers trade that came in the in part of their deal to move up to get Trey Lance. So that draft pick has traveled a little bit. Was the San Francisco 49ers, then the Dolphins. Now it is the Broncos, and now it will belong to the Saints if Payton and the Broncos agree to a contract. They will also give up their second round pick next year in 2024 and win a pick swap with the Saints, who will give the Broncos their third round pick. Seth, you and I were talking about this off the air, and it feels like, you know, New Orleans, the Saints as an organization, seem to be dead set on one thing, and that was recouping picks that they had lost, that they had given up in deals that they made last offseason, where they acquired, so they their first-round pick this year is now the Eagles, and that happened with their trade to acquire a second first-round pick that they then parlayed into moving up in the draft to get Chris Olave. And so they gave up this year's first-round pick and next year's second-round pick. It feels like that was the minimum that they were looking to do. They wanted a first this year and a second next year to get back from their picks that they gave up to get Chris Olave.
Yeah, and you know, whether, and people were like, well, the Cardinals could have given up this year's second and next year's third, and it would have been equivalent. It's like, that's fine, but the other team has to accept that. Like, while the equivalency in the trade value chart might be the same, the reality is the other team has to say yes. And you know, I don't think that was going to happen. It sounds more like the Cardinals would have probably had to give up this year's first and next year's third, or this year's second and next year's second. And, you know, that's going to be probably two, depending on when Kyler Murray's back, that's probably two top 40 picks.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, he's
a really good coach.
Yeah.
But, and I mean, that's, and I was gonna say, that's a lot.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, trade value, the value of getting the first-round pick this year, number 29, and then a pick swap next year, feels like the Cardinals, and Kyle Odegaard, former reporter for the Cardinals, now runs compare.bet. Trade value-wise, the Cardinals' second-round pick, which is pick number 34 in the draft, and next year's third-round pick would have been equal in value, except for the detail that if the Saints were looking for a first-round pick this year and a second-round pick next year, it just doesn't look that good. That said, I'm gonna take a look at initial, because I put a poll out on should they have pulled the trigger on Sean Payton for this year's second and next year's third. I'm getting that the, and I'm trying to pull it. Well, let me pull it up on my phone. See if that Abley should have pulled the trigger. 40% probably is an 16%. So basically 56% of fan base either absolutely and probably should have done it, with another 4% saying probably not, in no way. Those two come in at fairly, but that's after a couple of hours. It was the one that makes sense, and the interesting part is the fact that it looked like Vic Fangio was going to be out of the picture. Guess what? Apparently back in the picture, and is likely going to end up with with the bracing fit. Interesting fit, honestly, after he got fired as head coach there. The Cardinals could have had Peyton and Fangio, which is, as Seth has said, it's the easiest thing to picture in succeeding here, because you have two longtime coaches with a track record of success. So you can, the most transferable thing, you could see the offense and Kyler Murray working with Sean Payton. We've seen Vic Fangio's defenses. And so that's the one you could envision. And it's the biggest splash type of thing that Cardinals fans love. And it is, honestly, it would have been really on brand for Michael Bidwill, who likes to take swings like that. That said, how serious do you think Cardinals were after that day-long, hours and hours visit with the Cardinals on Thursday last week?
You know, it's one of those situations where I think they were very serious about trying to get something done, and the reality just became that it wasn't going to materialize with what they were looking for. Like, the reality always becomes you have to have two to tango. And like you said regarding the Sean Payton situation, right? They interviewed him, they made overtures, and then it was about 24 hours later, Ian Rappaport says they're resetting after interview with Sean Payton. I mean, that just kind of told you right there that the compensation wasn't going to be met. And at that point, it was just trying to figure out like what's next in this thing. You know, but it's going to always beg the question, because you're going to start with simple things. You know, did they go hard enough after Frank Reich? Was he a serious candidate, or were they too focused on Sean Payton? Did they inform Dan Quinn that they weren't going to make an offer for him, or did Dan Quinn turn them down and decide to go back? By the way, that wouldn't just be Arizona, it would be Denver as well. Go back to Dallas. So those are the questions that'll get asked, you know, about this. But the reality is, and I tweeted this out, like, honestly, I don't mind the candidates that are left. Like, Sean Payton was the white whale, but if you had to give up three and a third next year, I don't think it's worth it. I don't. And it's just interesting because, you know, I really do think if the Cardinals had made this deal and they had given up the third overall pick, even if it was just the third overall pick, I think a lot of fans would have complained about it. And I think a lot of pundits would have roasted them for giving up too much.
Yeah.
And
that's
so it's
the
just
thing for me. It's, you know, a team that needs to rebuild. You've got a new general manager. Suppose they're good at the draft. Why would you give up the premium pick that you've got?
Well, and this is another way to look at it, and this isn't me. I didn't come up with this, so if they're missing something, I apologize. But the Broncos, under new ownership in the last 2 years for Sean Payton and Russell Wilson, have traded 3 first-round picks, 2 seconds, a fifth, Shelby Harris, Noah Fant, and a 2024, that was a second as well. Okay, so 3 seconds. And that's for Sean Payton and Russell Wilson. So that's the thing, is like, you're talking about splashes.
And that,
you know,
splash they made last year, epic fail.
Well, and then the other thing is, you have to remember too, is and for us, it literally doesn't matter. But the rumor is he's going to get $20 to $25 million a year. So he's going to be one of, if not the highest paid coaches in the NFL. So all of a sudden there comes expectations with that as well, right? Like, now all of a sudden it's not just you have to win immediately, which is an expectation, but you have to be competing for Super Bowls not Super Bowl, Super Bowls.
I think we're in.
Yeah, for like within what, 2 years, when you say? I mean, the expectation would be if Kyler comes back healthy and ready to go, you know, midway through 23 and they look good at the end of 23 and then heading into 24, you should be a Super Bowl contender. And but wait, you don't have a first round pick and you don't have a second round pick the next year. So like you're not going to be adding much to it as well. And so, you know, it's just one of those situations. And this is the other thing, and you and I have talked about this quite a bit. The Sean Payton infatuation also comes from how easy it is to envision if everything goes right. Right? So you have to envision, you know what a shorter quarterback in his offensive system looks like and what he can do. All right. And then you go to the defensive side, and if they bring on Vic Fangio, which, by the way, is absurd in and of itself, right? That Vic Fangio is going to go back to Denver after they fired him.
Right? That's crazy.
But you know what Vic Fangio's defenses look like. So all of a sudden, you're like, man, the Cardinals hired Sean Payton and Vic Fangio. This is like, when Kyler gets back, they're going to have a great offense. And you know, now they have Vic Fangio and they're able to add Will Anderson. Like they're going to have a great defense. And you're like, holy cow. But then you have to stop and think. You're like, okay, well now they can't add Will Anderson because they had to give up that third overall pick. Okay. Exactly. So now, you know, you're like, okay, what does he do with Myjai Sanders and Cam Thomas and Marcus Golden? And you know, that's the thing. It's really easy to visualize because we've seen what that success looks like. Whereas when we talk about Brian Flores, the immediate question is, who's his offensive coordinator? Like, that's literally the first question that comes up, right?
Yeah.
Like, who's offensive coordinator? You know, when you talk about these other guys, which we'll get to in a short time, that's the question. You know, if it's Mike Kafka, who's going to be his defensive coordinator? You know, if it's Lou Anna Marano or whatever you say, you know, who's his OC? Like, those are the questions that come up. But like Sean Payton, Vic Fangio, you're like, oh, this is great. We know exactly what we're getting. And so I think that is the other side of that coin, is that it's just comforting and it's easy. Like, there's no questions about it.
Yes, absolutely. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on to three new candidates who now are interviewing this week. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. If there was any sign to say that they probably were out on Sean Payton, or rather Sean Payton was out on them, or they were out on trading what the Saints wanted for compensation for hiring Sean Payton, it was the fact that they didn't go to second interviews with the candidates they'd already spoken to, despite the three names that came up of Aaron Glenn, Ejiro Evero, and Brian Flores. Instead, they brought in three. They have three guys they've now brought in this week. The first of which is Giants offensive coordinator Mike Kafka. Tuesday, he supposedly interviewed on Tuesday. They are set to bring in two Bengals coordinators over the next 2 days, Wednesday, Thursday, Lou Anarumo, their defensive coordinator, and Brian Callahan, their offensive coordinator. Very interesting that those can out the Cincy guys, they make sense to be why they now came up, because they were worried they would fill their schedule with other candidates and the Bengals were now eliminated, so now you can talk to them freely. The Mike Kafka one to me is the most intriguing, because one, it didn't seem to be on their radar initially. And two, the body of work is kind of fun. That's another one you can project and like. But let's look at what his course has been since 2017. He was on the Kansas City Chiefs staff as and mostly as a quarterback's coach. And then quarterbacks coach, passing and coordinator. Then, so who did he work for? Andy Reid. That's a really good coaching tree. Then he coaches Patrick Mahomes. He's his position coach. When Patrick Mahomes is putting up ungodly numbers at the quarterback position. Then he gets hired as the offensive coordinator this past season under Brian Daboll for the New York Giants. And not only was he the offensive coordinator, he's the play caller. And the Giants offense wasn't terrible. And with Daniel Jones, who has been, I don't know, like it just depends on what you think about Daniel Jones, but he got the best season out of Daniel Jones. It wasn't a great, he only had 15 touchdown passes, but the bugaboo about Jones has been this, turning the ball over. And Jones had the league's best interception percentage. He only threw 5 interceptions all season, 1.1%, the lowest in the league. He only fumbled the ball 6 times. This is a guy that was a turnover machine. He had a career high in passing yards, and he used his legs more. He rushed for over 700 yards this past season. So you under the influence of Kafka, you've got him working with the prototype of the modern quarterback in Patrick Mahomes and getting the best out of an enigmatic quarterback in Daniel Jones that in leads the Giants to the playoffs. I'm super intrigued by that. He's interviewed for other positions, and when you look at what the Cardinals need, you to me, it gets me a little bit excited about what he could do with Kyler Murray.
Yeah, and you have to look at this year, and you and I double-checked before we came on the air, something Jess always does and I never do, but we double-checked before we came on the air to make sure that this was true, that Kafka called the offense this year for the Buffalo Bills. So, or sorry, the New York Giants. Sorry. I was thinking about Brian Daboll while I was saying it. So he called the offense for the New York Giants. So not only is he, you know, showing that he knows how to work well with quarterbacks, obviously, you know, you give him some credit for his work with Patrick Mahomes, but you have to give him a lot of credit for Daniel Jones this year. And people are going to say, well, you know, like you said, just 15 touchdowns. Well, okay, he didn't have career year in terms of touchdowns, but he had a career
really well. Now, granted, they have Saquon Barkley, who came back and was great, but they built a great running game, and Daniel Jones complemented that with his legs, and they didn't turn the ball over.
Right, and he had a career year in every other regard. You look at it, you know, he only threw 5 interceptions this year, like you talked about, which is, you know, the career high or career low, I guess, in interceptions. His yards per attempt was highest of his career. His average yards per attempt, his yards per completion, his quarterback rating was 8 points higher than his highest, and his QBR was 5 points higher than its highest. Like, and by the way, he still was sacked 44 times this year. 44. So you look at it, you can't be like, oh, he, you know, everything was so much better. No, it really wasn't. The reality was he was able to do more, like you said, completion percentage, yardage, you know, everything but touchdowns was the highest it had been. And then the other thing you got to think about too, and you know, we talk about this a lot, and you know, the scoring offense, 21.5 points per game. Okay, not great by any means. That's fine. But where did their touchdowns come from? And you talked about it, right? So you had 15 touchdowns by him, thrown by him, 1 by Davis Webb, 1 by Tyrod Taylor. So 17 passing touchdowns. They had 21 rushing touchdowns this season, 21, which was 4th in the NFL. So his passing numbers potentially could have been better, but they didn't need to, because they were scoring touchdowns on the ground. And like you said, I think he had, what, 7 this year rushing touchdowns? Yeah. 700 yards rushing and 7 rushing touchdowns. So he had 22 combined touchdowns. So that's the thing, is you look at it, you know, you have a guy that had his career best season under this guy as the offensive coordinator. And, you know, you see a guy that can potentially grow – because he's young, with Kyler, you know, and like you said, his work with Patrick Mahomes, with these other guys, that's all stuff that it can build on. It is interesting, you know, because people look at Daniel Jones this year and they're like, oh, career best year, and Kyler Murray's career worst year, and it was, the numbers are almost the same, right? So
I do a weekly radio appearance usually on AM 1060 KDUS, and one of the things that Dave Bierstein, Rooster Bierstein, came at me at was a stat comparison, and Kyler Murray's year, his player comp statistically was Andy Dalton this year. Gross.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at it, obviously there's a lot to it, you know, and one of the biggest things was obviously never having that full arsenal of weapons and or for, and then his offensive line at the end of the season. So, but you look at it and Kafka brings some intrigue. You know, you and I were going over it before this started, you know, who could he bring in? So his, you know, his names that are, you know, guys that he's worked with or is currently working with. And there's some intriguing names. You know, a guy that's been with the Cardinals before, David Merritt, could be a defensive coordinator. He, you know, he's a DB coach in Kansas City, was a DB coach here. He's been a defensive backs coach for a long time in the NFL. You know, I don't know. He was with Steve Wilkes' crew, so I'm not sure, you know, what type of bad blood, no blood, whatever there is going on there.
And that they did have a good pass defense that year.
Yeah, and so you got, you know, you have him. You've got interesting guys out of KC when he was there that are still, you know, around. And then obviously, like we talked about, his time, or, you know, now with the New York Giants, you know, you've got interesting guys like Andre Patterson, who's been a defense coordinator in the league, older guy, you know. So, and then we talked about a guy like a Jerome Henderson, who's been around for a long time and was with the Falcons in the Dan Quinn years, and was their defensive passing game coordinator. So he, again, he's, you know, been around, done it for a long time, 53 years old. You know, so you look at it, just a couple names, because that's the question, right? With Kafka, it's not who's going to call the offense, it's who's going to call the defense. So that's what you look at. And so there's some interesting names that he can bring with them and kind of create a coaching staff. And that's, you know, something to think about as you think about him as a candidate.
And then we have the other candidates that came up, the coordinator, Alu Anaramu, and then what is there to, like, you know, both from the Bengals, been on Zach Taylor's staff the entire time he's been there. And so you can see offensively what they've done. You've seen what they do with, obviously, Joe Burrow. The defense has been pretty solid. So the Bills, which have turned around that team to make it a pretty solid overall team. Anaramu definitely is Anarumo is the of experience as a coordinator, years of coaching in the league. To me, it kind of feels would be like a Vic Fangio hire, longtime coordinator, finally getting a shot. What is there to like about a guy like Rue?
I think Anaro brings that, you know, defensive toughness. You see how well the Bengals defensively and how well they tackle and, you know, things like that. Like, they're a team that just, you know, puts together solid defensive game plans. He's a defensive backs guy. You know, you would be intrigued with what he brings in terms of developing D DBs, and we've seen, you know, Jesse Bates making all pro teams, Eli Apple turning his career around, Cam Taylor this year, you know, being a guy that was really, really intriguing as a rookie. And I think he was like a day three rookie. And then you look at their front, like this is a dude that schemed up some really impressive defensive front numbers without, I would say, stars on the team, right? Like they don't have the Bosa or those guys, but you know, you look at Trey Hendrickson, Sam Hubbard, Safosai, you know, BJ Hill, like those guys all had really solid seasons. And so I think that all of that would make him an intriguing defensive guy. You know, and again, the first question you're going to have with him is, okay, who is offense coordinator? So, you know, you get a name that would be interesting. And he's done a really nice job with their tight ends, and he's the tight end. And we've seen that these tight end coaches have done a nice job. Brian Daboll, you know, comes to mind first, but James Casey, I don't know if you remember him. He was in the league forever with the Texans and Eagles a little bit, but he's been a tight end coach with Houston from 17 to 18, so under Bill O'Brien, and then been the tight end coach since he's 2019. So, you know, a guy, and I know people would be like, well, that's underwhelming. It's like, well, you're not going to go get, you know, the top guy. Like, they have to have crossed over. Anamoramu, despite all the years of experience, you look at it, he was in Purdue from 2004 to 2011, and then he was with the Dolphins from 2012 to 2017. So he's not exactly been, despite having been a coach since 1989, he hasn't exactly been around the league. Like, you look at it, in the NFL, he's only coached with the Dolphins, the Giants, and the Bengals. That's it. And so, you know, he's cut his teeth. He's you know, done his time, and now this, you know, he's going to potentially get a shot. And that's why you said, it's a little like Vic Fangio. Another interesting guy on the Cincy staff. And again, this is, you know, you kind of are just going by what they have. He's been an offensive coordinator in college, which I don't know, would intrigue guys, but he's, you know, the wide receiver coach for the Bengals. And they have probably the best wide receiver core in the NFL. I don't know how you feel about that, but I would say close to.
It's good. It certainly is good.
And former Arizona Cardinal, so he knows the organization. Troy Walt, you know, again, he's 46, man. That's crazy to think about.
But that's my age.
It's just crazy to think 2006 was 17 years ago.
Yeah. Because
I remember the name. Like, that's the crazy thing. But, yeah, so, I mean, so he's only been in the NFL for 3 years now, sorry. So the, you know, but he has, you know, done a really nice job with those Bengals wide receivers. And you might say, well, yeah, they had a lot to work with. Well, yeah, but you know, let's be honest, like the Cardinals haven't flipped second round picks. I'm not blaming coaches, but I'm just saying if you want to look at that. So and then on the other side, Brian Callahan, right? Yeah. So Callahan, who would he bring? Well, I can tell you who he won't bring, and that's James Betcher, who's the linebackers coach for the Cincinnati Bengals. I shouldn't say that. I mean, Vic Fangio and the Broncos can move on, I guess, maybe, but, you know, probably not. Let's, you know.
Well, Callahan does, like, if you look at it, because he's been the quarterback's coach before. He coached Matthew Stafford in Detroit and Derek Carr in Oakland at the time. And so, you know, 2016, 2017, Matthew Stafford, not a bad. Derek Carr has been pretty productive. And now he's worked with Joey Burrow. So the guys he's worked with have been good. And the offense, the Bengals offense has been, like, it's not elite, but it's also a very effective offense. in pretty much all phases. They've gotten production from the receivers. They had a strong running attack. Their offensive line was a mess, and they remade that this year, and it just didn't work out in terms of injuries. But and they were able to produce even with problems with protection.
Yeah, and so who would Callahan be able to bring? Again, this is just going off of like the last couple of years staff with the Bengals, who he's had crossover with. But you look at Callahan, a name that's been a defense coordinator in college and been a really good defensive line coach in the NFL is Marion Hobby. He's 56 years old. So, you know, Callahan is what, 30 or 40? He's younger, right?
Yeah, he's 38. Late 30s, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, 38. So, you know, so he was with the Jaguars in 2017, went to the AFC Championship. He's part of that Brian Flores coaching staff in 2019-2020 with the Miami Dolphins that you saw them kind of overhaul their defense. And we've talked about that 2020 Dolphins team, right? Like how good they were defensively in Flores' second year. Hobby's a big impact on that. And then we just talked about how good the Bengals defensive line is now. And he's the guy that coaches that. So again, called defense for Duke, was the co-defense coordinator for Clemson their year they won the national championship in 2016. Defensive line coach for the Jags, the Dolphins, the Bengals. So again, it's been around a lot. And then another guy that's really, really, and I doubt would be interested in being a DCN. A senior defensive assistant specialist, whatever. Mark Duffner around, literally since, I mean, he's going to be 70 this year. He started in 1975 as a coach. So we're talking, you know, he's around. But he was the DC in Tampa in 2018. He's been with the Bengals since 2019. A guy that's been around the block, worked with the linebackers in Tampa, in 2016 to 2018, the Dolphins, the Jags, the Packers. So again, this is a guy where you talk about like being able to pull guys from around the league, right? This is the guy. Whereas like we talked about with Anoramu, he just hasn't been many places. Like he goes somewhere and he's really successful and he doesn't get fired, which is a different approach.
Right. When you just like take Steve Heiden, who just left the Cardinals for the Bengals, he survived three different coaching staffs. He'd been with the Cardinals for 10 years. He was on Arian's staff, he was on Steve Wilks' staff, and on Kingsbury's staff. That's hard to do, honestly.
It's very hard to do. And so you look at it, you know, you've got, and I'm kind of going through their stuff. You've got Brian Callahan was with the Raiders in the first year back of John Gruden. So what a guy like Rich Bachia, whatever his name is, who was the running. Yeah. Bisaccio, would he be interested in, you know, coming on board? He was a quarterback's wide receivers coach, running backs coach in college, did all that stuff forever. And then assistant head coach and running backs and stuff. I mean, he's been around forever. So that's the thing, is you just kind of have to look at where they've been and then kind of throw darts, right? Cause that's kind of usually how that stuff works. But I think all three have intriguing trees that they can go through that are not awful and that aren't exactly ones that you're necessarily you don't like. And so, and I'm going back actually, and Callahan worked with Jim Bob Cooter when Cooter was the OC in Detroit, and people might be like, well, that sucked, but he's with the Jags this year as their passing game coordinator. You look at the work he's done with Trevor Lawrence, you know, again, you just have to dig around and find where these guys were and how it worked out. And, you know, again, we won't know until they're hired, because that's why, again, Sean Payton was everybody's favorite, right? Because it was like, oh, this is really easy. Well, this is really tough, because we're talking about guys that you, yeah.
Most of the we've barely heard of, and then common listeners, normal fans that listen to the Cardinals, they might not have ever heard of.
Right. You don't know who the defensive line coach is for Cincy. Like, that's not something. The only reason you know who the linebackers coach is because it's James Betcher. You know who that guy is. So, like, those are, you know, that's the type of stuff that you go through and kind of works through things. And so we'll see. But those three are intriguing. For you, like, out of those three, which one intrigues you the most? Is it Kafka?
It is Kafka. Honestly, it is Kafka for me.
Yeah, I think Kafka is the most intriguing. I like Anaromo, but again, like the cop out, right? I just want to know who his OC is going to be. But we talked about this the other day. The concern I have, and you, I think you brought up Fangio, and that's a great, you know, kind of name to pull from. Fangio had a little more DC experience, you know, but you know, Anaromo is kind of the same type of guy. Been around the league for a long time, always kind of been the background guy. Would he be good as the and you know, can he deal it from the best unit we're talking about? And defense, I mean, his and what he's built over the last couple of years is phenomenal. But and Fangio's a great example of that, and he was about 5 years older than Anaromo. So you know, if you wait 5 more years to hire Anaromo, they have much more similar backgrounds. You know, it didn't work for Fangio. Just, it didn't. And that's the reality of it. Like, some of these guys are great at calling defenses, and they just aren't good coaching.
Coming up next on the Rise of Positive, start Cardinals Talk on the Web. We'll move on from the coaching talk to move on to talk about Kyler Murray and his comeback from his ACL. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Kyler Murray, a photo of him looking, you know, longingly, kind of thoughtfully and pensive, with you could see the scars on his knee. It wasn't the first one. Apparently, his dog, Swoosh, had some knee surgery because they showed matching staples in their knees. That said, the report that came out on Sunday, and Seth, I was telling you this before the show, I was like, why? What is it about the Cardinals organization that has to seemingly embarrass their franchise quarterback? And on the surface, it doesn't seem like much, but the fan base and some of the local columnists and opinionists have kind of taken it to, let's say, adding to the Kyler Murray narrative. And Ian Rappaport comes out and said, Kyler Murray not likely going to be ready for the start of the season, and don't expect him, like, maybe it won't even be midseason, saying that he's going to take his time coming back. He's going to make sure it's 100%. He wants it to be right because he's got a long career ahead of it, suggesting that he's not going to try to come back and perform early. You know, we've seen other quarterbacks come back quickly. Joe Burrow, when he came back, You could tell he wasn't 100%, but still wanted to get back on the field fairly quickly. Carson Palmer, when he suffered his knee injury, was back and ready for a full go for that 2015 season. And it's interesting. Now, on the surface, you know, it makes sense. You want to make sure that you come back correctly from that knee injury so that it doesn't mess up the rest of his career like we've seen other quarterbacks, other players do. Especially the one that comes to mind is RG3. Who's never the same after he came back from his injuries. The interesting thing about this is that, and this is something you can confirm from contacts you have, and again, citing Kyle Odegaard from Compare.bet, a former team reporter for the Cardinals, so he does have some inside information, is that that report does not come from the Kyler Murray camp. The message from the Kyler Murray camp is not, we're taking our time, and to hear that and to hear that that's what you have heard as well from people within the Kyler camp is it makes it look bad again. Like, what are the Cardinals doing? Because the way it's worded, it makes it sound like Kyler himself is just taking his time and he's not working hard to come back 100%. What is it about this organization that can't seem to get out of its own way when it comes to their star quarterback?
That's the million-dollar question. Like, you know, if Bidwell doesn't like him, then why'd you give him the contract, right?
Who is it with the organization saying that? Because all you have to do, if you don't want to make it sound like Kyler Murray is a schluff and he's not working hard, and he's not a gamer. All you have to do is to say the Cardinals aren't going to rush Kyler back. They want him to come back 100%. That would be on brand, honestly, because that is what they had done with his hamstring. They didn't rush him back because they had a quarterback that they trusted. They wanted to make sure that he could play at a high level. If the Rappaport report had said the Cardinals, you know, they'd like to get him back early, but they won't be disappointed if it's not until like midseason, because they make sure that his knee is 100% before he gets back out on the field. That would be way different than saying Kyler's taking his time from his injury, making it sound like he's just playing video games and just collecting a paycheck, when we know that's not Kyler. We know that's not Kyler. He's played through injuries before. The times that he's been off, it has been the organization telling him, no, we're going to go with this route.
Yeah, and it's just interesting, like you said, to continue to throw your franchise quarterback under the bus, and it's a bad look for the organization as a whole. And you know, quite frankly, there's a reason that they've failed for so long, right? And sometimes it's little stuff like this. And you know, A.Q. Shipley was on the McAfee show today. I don't know if you saw that, but kind of going at them about their facilities and the fact that, you know, they haven't updated or upgraded the facility in Tempe, like the practice facility, in forever. And it's really intriguing because it seems like for an organization that is so old that at some point they would listen, right, to like what is said about them, but instead it just seems like they kind of put their fingers in there and just go, no, not us, and then throw their quarterback under the bus, like, oh, you know, he's taking his time. It's like, no, I mean, the reality is he's got to come back and work into a new system. So, like, instead of being able just to rehab and come back to the system he knows, he's going to have to rehab and then get in sync and learn the new offensive system all at the same time. And those are a lot more – that's a lot more difficult than it is just coming back from an injury.
Absolutely. And so the question then comes itself. Do you think that Kyler, compared to other quarterbacks, is soft with injuries? That he is less able to play through injuries than other players in the league, than other guys? Then when you got like a Brock Purdy, who, granted, he wasn't able to do anything. You got Patrick Mahomes playing like Buda Baker did on this high ankle sprain and, you know, doing that sort of thing. Is Kyler a softer player? Does he lack the moxie and the gamesmanship and the drive that some other face quarterbacks have?
I don't think so. I mean, we've seen him come back. We've seen him come back, you know, in the LA Rams game with the high ankle sprain, and he just wasn't able to perform. We've seen him, you know, stick it out when he has been injured and then miss games after, like in the Minnesota Vikings game, right, where he tweaked the hamstring and played through it the whole time, and and didn't come out. And so that's the thing, is I think people want to put every situation on Kyler and be like, see, look at this. And it's like, all right, well, you know, Kyler probably could have played if you didn't ask him to throw the ball at all, right? Like when he had the shoulder injury. Oh, wait, he did play. And then we criticized him for not playing well. I mean, that's the thing, is like he's played through injuries. I think you and I counted it three times, but it might have been twice.
His rookie year, it was the finale. He played through the hamstring because they felt that it was really important for him to play every single game. He played through the shoulder in 2020. Then he played through, well, he came back at the end of 2020 on the high ankle sprain in the same game. He came back after missing three games with the high ankle sprain in 2021. And you could tell he wasn't 100% after that. He was limited mobility, so he was able to play, but he was not able to do Kyler Murray things. And then this year he played through the hamstring until he couldn't play through a hamstring.
Right. And then he probably came back a little too soon and blew out his knee. So,
and, you know, and that is the other thing. Was the hamstring and then the coming back from that lead to the ACL tear? I mean, that's another thing.
And so, you know, that's the thing, is like, I don't know. It's just a weird, obsession that if Patrick Mahomes did this in the AFC Championship, in the playoffs and in the AFC Championship game, that we know for a fact that Kyler Murray wouldn't do it. And it's like, based on what? And when you ask him that, well, his history. Okay, so when he played through the injuries, what did you say? Well, he didn't really play through injuries. Well, we just listed out every injury he's played through and went through, and when he came back and how long he was out for. You know, he's never taken the 8 weeks or 12 weeks that the ankle sprains that.
You remember Jimmy Garoppolo was like it coming back too early from that ankle injury in 2020, 2021. Was disastrous. He re-injured it, and he basically, you know, his 2020 was, or 2021 was a mess as a result.
And so the other thing is, and this is, you know, always intriguing to me, is, you know, when you look at those things and you say, well, he wouldn't have done it. And you ask like, well, how do you know? And, you know, what's your, not your, but like, what is your, that says is, I know for a fact that he won this. And it's like, I would love to know how you can factually state something, right, without knowing. So it's just, I mean, it's just intriguing, man. I've never met a town that has,
we're hell, but this fan base is hell bent on being upset.
Well, and not just that, but like had so many negatives about a kid his entire career. I mean, remember, there was literally people that said, I'm never going to be a fan again because
they gave up on Josh Rosen.
Yeah. Because they gave up on Josh Rosen, right. Who's failed, but you know, that's, that was wrong. You know, and then now I'm not going to be a fan again because they extended Kyler. And I was like, okay, well, I mean, if your problem is with Kyler, then go be a fan of a different team, like until he leaves. So like it won't kill you, I promise. Like, go be a fan of a different team. And then when he's gone and you know they're back to the Ryan Lindley's and John Skelton's and Kevin Cobb's and those guys, you guys can be super excited for the year and then complain about it for the rest of the year. And then, you know, then the next year we'll have, you know, another guy and then another guy and, you know, we'll just keep doing it. And eventually, hopefully we'll like one other backs that we have, that's young and is able to play at a high level for longer than like 30 games. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, people love Kurt Warner and Carson Palmer and they basically played like 35 to 40 good games for the Cardinals. And they're like this greatest quarterbacks they've ever had. Yeah. And it's like, well, yeah. And doesn't that upset you? that the greatest quarterbacks they've ever had maybe played a combined five seasons total.
Right. Well, then you go back to Jake Plummer, who, you know, he was magical in 98, but you look at his numbers, he had...
I don't think he ever put up numbers like Kyler did.
No, and I think maybe once. I don't even know. I have to go look back. I can't remember if it was never. Maybe once he didn't have more interceptions than touchdowns in a season for the Cardinals. Now, he was much better with the Broncos, but in all his time with the Cardinals, I do not believe he ever had more touchdown passes than interceptions. I think one year might have been – I can double-check. I'm going to fact-check myself on that because I've cited that site before. I've cited that stat before. I don't want to sound like a moron more than I normally do.
Plummer, 15-15 – 29 and 24.
Okay, he had one season of 2001 where he had more than 15-15, 17-20, and that was the playoff year. 1999, 9-24. He was off. 13-21 in 2000, then 18-14 in 2001, 18-20 in 2002 before he went on to Denver where he went 15-7, 27-20, 18. Jeez. That's Jake Plummer.
I was going to say 30-52 as a starter. 90 touchdowns to 114 interceptions. And so that's
awesome.
That's what I'm saying. Like, and you look at it, like Palmer played 6 games, which is about, you know, 3 and a quarter seasons for the Cardinals. You know, he had 105 touchdowns to 57. You know, for 5 seasons, he played in C1 games, 27-30 as the starter, 100 touchdowns, 59 interceptions. It's only Palmer had a winning record in Arizona. Like, that's it. And you know, it's just intriguing to me how strong the dislike is for a guy that's 20 and 31 in his career, 84 touchdowns to only 41 interceptions, you know, and he's only played in games. So it's like, you know, it's like, so we'll see. I mean, I get it. Like, we'll see how it turns out this year and the next year. But the other thing is this, you mentioned Jimmy Garoppolo injury, you know. You look at Kyler had his surgery, 2 weeks after the injury, 3 weeks after the injury, about a month
because it was just after the start of the year.
And so 4 weeks after the injury, he has his surgery, you know, and we look at it and go, you know, you mentioned Joe Burrow. Burrow was injured in, was it October or November for him?
I don't remember.
He was injured in November. And so, you know, and he played, he came back for the start of the season. So he was able, so he was about a month ahead of Kyler. So, again, same offense, same system, same all of that. So that's, you know, that's something to think about. But I was going to say, like, look at Odell Beckham. Odell Beckham couldn't get cleared medically this year. I mean, and we cited an actual study on this show. And it's still like this baffling thing to people. Like, there are people that take 9 months. There are people that take 12 months. There are people that take 15 months. And there are people that will never recover. Like, that's literally the science of it. You hope that he's one of the 9 month guys. But even in 9 months, that would be October. Like, literally, that would be October. So he'd miss 2 or 3 games. I just don't always understand it, but I know math's a really hard subject for a lot of people. So maybe that's why it's just asking too much.
With that, we will end this edition of the Rise Up Cigarette Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk web. We will have, I probably will do a solo show later on in the week. We'll see what happens moving on after that, but we will have some Super Bowl content next week. I know I will have an anecdote to tell about Patrick Mahomes and how he hosed the Cardinals and tricked his way and kind of schemed his way into the Chiefs trading for him. But yeah, that'll be coming up next in the next few days. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.